The days are longer, the calendar is filling up, and I want to feel as good as this beautiful summer weather. That's why I've been loving Grüns. It's one daily pack of gummies that covers my greens, vitamins, minerals, and even has 6 grams of prebiotic fiber, so I don't need to juggle a complicated wellness routine on top of everything else. They taste amazing, they're easy to toss in my bag on the go, plus they're vegan, gluten-free, and HSA and FSA, eligible for reimbursement. Save up to 52% off with code PODCAST at Grüns.co. That's code PODCAST at GRUNS.co.
Moncrief on News Talk.
It is time to answer some of your parenting questions. Joanna Fortune joins us once again. Afternoon, Joanna. First question is this. I've 2 sons aged 9 and 11, and my husband is a dairy farmer working incredibly long hours. I should say I'm not from a farming background myself, so this is all quite different to how I was raised. Over the midterm, he had the boys getting up at 6 a.m. every second morning to help with milking the cows. Both of them were also expected to help with the evening milking at 5 p.m. They weren't thrilled about it and did complain to me, but they did it. Now that school is back, my husband has said that one of them will have to get up every Saturday and Sunday morning to help, rotating weekends between them. I feel that 6 a.m. on school weekends might be too much for boys their age, but my husband feels strongly that it teaches discipline, responsibility and the value of hard work. And he often says he was doing even more at their age. To be fair, he's milking 120 cows on his own, so he genuinely needs the help. Is this a healthy way to teach work ethic and responsibility, or is it too much to expect from children of 9 and 11? And how do we, as parents, get on the same page about it?
That last bit is the crux of the question, because the issue here isn't really the task. It's that as parents, you're not on the same page, and children, particularly 9 and 11 year old children, will be very good at spotting that you're not on board with this, that you're not certain, and they'll see it as an opportunity to protest. So yes, they can bemoan the hard work, but they're going to someone that isn't really thinking they should be doing that. So that's the issue here. The challenge without, you know, I mean, look at Sean. Is it too much for kids to do? I don't think so. I'm honest. These are kids growing up on a farm. Part of being in a family that is a farming family is helping out on the farm. And it'll be interesting, anyone listening who's from a farming family or not, I think we'll get very different views on this. But I've always said, you know, children should have chores. They should know that part of being in a family is everybody helps out. What those chores are should be, you know, commensurate with their age and stage of development and their capacity, of course, all of that. But it is important that they have those chores. So your husband is not wrong when he says this kind of responsibility, discipline, the value of hard work, all of that is true. And the reality is there, if he has such a huge herd that's to be milked twice a day, he really does need the help.
Yeah, so it's 120 cows.
Like it's a massive job. So, but I think with kids, you know, saying to them, come on up now at 6 a.m. and go out and milk the cows, there'll always be kids who'll go, that sounds like fun, I want to do it. And there'll always be kids going,
really? Can you name them?
I'd rather not, you know. I think it has to be framed as, you know, look, yes, you're going to do this, but we have this time together, we're having a chat. And after the task is achieved, you know, we're celebrating with a big family breakfast at the weekend. And that becomes the thing to look forward to. You know, that you do the work and you come in and you sit down then. I mean, they're up at 6. Is that too early for 9 and 11 year olds? I mean, I envy this family if that's too early for 9 and 11 year olds, because 6 a.m. everyone's awake in my house. So I don't think it is once they get enough sleep going to bed at night. So I don't think the issue is the task, Sean. I really think the issue is that as parents, you're not on the same page. And that's what's going to cause you a problem with the boys, because they'll feed on that division. So the most important thing to do is sit down and talk it through. And whether you feel weekend on, weekend off might actually, you could give the boys a choice.
Which is what he's saying,
exactly. But if you want to give them a sense of participation in this, you could give them a choice and say, do you want to alternate, one of you does Saturday, one does Sunday every week? Or do you want to do one weekend on, one weekend off? Look at you, that's your choice, not whether you do the task or not.
they'll choose, weekend off, and he goes first.
You might have to do that in a playful way, pulling a name out of a bowl.
I'm looking for some advice on an issue with my 7-year-old daughter, who has started taking things every time we visit someone's house. It's not big or valuable items. It could be jewellery, a hand towel, small toys, coins, but it's happening constantly. We always return the items and talk to her about it, and she doesn't seem malicious or defiant. Sometimes she even seems surprised or embarrassed when we find things later under her bed. I'm not sure if this is a normal curiosity at her age, attention-seeking behaviour, or something more concerning. She says she doesn't know why she does it, and we have told her it's wrong to steal. How should we handle this in a way that teaches her boundaries and respect for other people's property without shaming her or labelling her as a thief? At what point should we be worried that it's more than just a phase?
Really interesting. Okay. And there's a couple of things here. You know, when we look at stealing, shoplifting, anything like that, you know, with children, we're often actually, and I'm trying to think previously when we've talked about this, I think it's been around adolescence, and we do see that pattern of behavior. But what can happen very quickly is if children or young people see something they want, a want quickly becomes a need. I want it, therefore I need it. So if you then, then I'm entitled to it because it's a need, right? I'm entitled to have my needs met. But if you then say no, you're denying me my entitlement, and then I can take it and feel like I didn't do anything wrong because I'm entitled to do that. So entitlement is very often the crux of what's motivating the overt action of stealing or taking something. That said, at this little one's age, at just seven, stealing is more often due to things like poor impulse control, thrill seeking. Just doing it for the ooh. Now, that doesn't sound like what's going on here, but that's often something we'd look at. And the other one, and it's hinted at in this letter, is a poor understanding of boundaries. That in itself can simply be, you know, that an underdeveloped sense of what's mine is mine, what's yours is yours, as opposed to thinking, sure, it's all mine. And I can just help myself. So I'm wondering if that's the issue. Now, if the parents listening are going, no, look, we do have issues with impulsive behavior or impulse control in general, this may well fall under that category. Now, explaining behavior is not the same as excusing behavior, and I would not excuse this behavior simply because if this escalates or and it's being described as something that's going on consistently, it's going to become more of a problem. And while as parents you won't want to label her a thief, other people will.
So if
she brings that outside of people's homes, into shops or places like that, there are real consequences for this. So when the parent is saying, we always return the item and talk to her about it, that's not ringing clear for me. So I'm not sure, does that mean as parents you return the item on her behalf or
get her to do it?
Exactly. If it's the former, I really would encourage you to ensure she is the one that's making the repair, that she's going back to whomever the item belongs to, that she is saying, I took this and I shouldn't have and I'm sorry and now I'm returning it, so that she gets to it, not to shame her, but to just bring about accountability. Because accountability is a great antidote for entitlement.
Yeah.
So you want to nip that in the bud now. I was also curious in everything listed here that she seems surprised and embarrassed when the things are found. Does she feel guilty?
Yeah.
That's not in here. And I'm curious about that. Like, is she feeling, oh, I feel badly that I did that. I have a sense of guilt. Not that she's bad, but that she feels she has done a bad thing. And I think that's something that you do want to explore as well. The fact that this, it says she has started taking things. So that to me inferred this is a recent change.
Yeah.
Anything that's a recent change from otherwise good behavior, I would always be looking at, well, what's going on? Has there been a change? Family, school, community, environmentally, what has gone on for her that might, you know, explain why this has started? But then it's described as something that's happening consistently. So if it is a regular or a patterned behavior, I would encourage linking in with a child mental health professional, like a child and adolescent psychotherapist as well.
Yeah, that's a well spotted the started work there. Just on the kids working on the farm, a lot of comments on that. My son was at the swimming pool for six for training. Says the texter, which is probably a thing that still happens. Peter says, as a culture on a farm, I was in full time enslavement. And my father was tough. Just comes with the territory. I have a funny feeling Mammy won't be too happy with Joanna's advice there. She could always pull on the wellies and workwear and help herself out. Well, I'm sure she's lots of other things to do. A neighbour of ours was an agricultural contractor back in the 80s. The sons were drawn silage in their primary school uniforms. I grew up with a family business. We always worked. It gave us a great work ethic, served us fantastically for later life, as well as working for other people. And yes, from age 8 or 9. says a listener in Cork. Somebody else says, I'm surprised at Joanna's response to the farming question. Of course the kids could help, but they're being used as child labour. Chores are different. Pay help if you need it to that extent.
I don't think it's as straightforward as that.
Yeah.
And I think if you're from a farming background, it is, it's quite a normal practice. I also don't think they're being used as like labour. They're helping out.
Yes.
With the task that's being done.
Yeah. Our brother-in-law passed away 2 days ago after a short illness, and we're navigating how to explain this to our five-year-old. She keeps asking when she can speak to him or see him again. She's definitely picking up on the fact that we're upset. We want to be honest with her, but we're also very conscious about not creating fear or anxiety around death. We're unsure how much detail is appropriate at her age, whether she'd really understand what it means that he's died, and how to explain that he won't be coming back. We're not planning to bring her to the funeral, so we're also wondering how best to help her process everything without that experience. Or do you think we should bring her to the funeral? What's the healthiest and most age-appropriate way to handle this?
I'm so sorry for your loss, first of all. You know, condolences, that's huge. And you can feel it in this letter. And I think this is what happens when huge life events occur in any of our lives. As parents, we're compelled to think, well, how do I manage this for my child? But often at a cost to tuning into, well, how am I managing it?
Yeah,
you know, with and for myself. And this is happening to all of you. I think, you know, she's young, she's five, not too young to talk about death. You know, we've had this conversation many times.
Yeah.
Children developmentally become interested and often intrigued by death as a concept between the ages of 4 and 6. So she developmentally will be aware of death. However, the reality and the permanence of death will not be developmentally understood at the age of 5. That takes much longer. So her questions around, oh yeah, okay, I understand, but when will he be back?
Yeah,
I hear you, but when am I going to see him? That's all very developmental for her age. So it's a conversation that you're going to be having now, but you're going to be returning to. And it's likely in maybe a month, 2-3 months time, that's when she's going to be like, are you kidding? Like, did you really mean he wasn't coming back?
Yeah.
So it's that kind of thing. There's no right or wrong, Sean, when it comes to bringing a child to a funeral. That's very much family parental choice. What I would say is consider how available, emotionally and physically available, you will be on that day.
Yeah.
It's a day that all of you are going to be affected. So it may not be something that you can really guide her through, in which case don't bring her.
Mm.
Also consider how she, if she was there, might cope with seeing all of her grown-ups emotionally upset and crying. That can be very frightening for a child as well. So just weigh those things up. And if the decision is not to bring her, do explain where you're going. That you're going to this, it's a ceremony called a funeral, and it's going to be about her uncle's death. The other thing you're going to do, though, is have a conversation with her using very simple, concrete language. I once worked, you know, with a little one who had difficulty with grief, is how I suppose it was described. But really what it was she didn't understand the person was dead, because the language being used was he'd passed away, we'd lost him.
Yeah,
and she genuinely thought this person was missing. And couldn't understand why people weren't out looking for him.
Yeah.
So the language is so important. At the moment, it's so raw. Those are hard words to find. So be clear about the finality that when somebody dies, their life is over and they're not coming back.
Mm.
And when your life is over, it means your heart doesn't beat anymore, your lungs don't breathe anymore. And that's what it means when your life is over. And then lean into whatever personal, spiritual, religious beliefs that you have as a family that will contextualize the what happens after piece for her.
Yeah.
That's very much up to you. But just the finality of that, his life here on earth with us, that's over. And you do. And I think with young children, it's very helpful to talk about, you know, when things die, they don't come back to life, be that flowers, be that leaves falling from a tree, using nature around it as well, talking about, well, that's dead now. Season is over. A new season has begun, so that they're getting used to the concepts and the language. I would, you know, because, you know, she's 5 years old, this is her uncle, a natural question for her will be, well, hang on, could that happen to my mom and dad? That's something to anticipate. So when you're talking, you might want to link his death to the fact that he was sick, and he was the kind of sick that you don't get better. It's a different kind of sick. So you might want to just include those details as well. I think books are always helpful for this, if only to read yourself, to give you a vocabulary and a language and a kind of how am I going to approach this. I always mention Molly Potter's book, Let's Talk About When Someone Dies. Incredibly detailed. You're not going to hand that to your five-year-old. You'll be reading sections with her, or you'll read it and it'll frame what you'll say. Patrice Cart's book, The Invisible String, of course, is the famous book about loss and how we stay connected to things, people, pets, after we lose them. And there is a beautiful book by Britta Teckentrup called The Memory Tree that I do think a little five-year-old would enjoy. And it's about these animals in the forest, and they lose one of their animal friends who has died, and they all come together, and in sharing memories, each memory becomes a leaf on a tree and they grow. It's the memory tree. But there's great comfort in the idea of community and sharing memories and stories. That could be a nice one to bring in as well.
Yeah. Whatever about bringing her to the funeral, bringing a child to a wake where there might be a body.
Now, again, it depends on family beliefs and practices. I've been at wakes where there have been small children. Sometimes they're kept away from the particular room. You know, it really, that's a lot for a young child to take though, Sean. Yeah. I do want to say that. So I would be, especially at 5 years old, very cautious about that, because what you don't want is that she becomes scared by this. You know, death is a very complex concept for any of us to get our heads around. But for a small child, they need a lot of support and guidance. So I would keep that very basic and very straightforward information.
Yeah, because like seeing the body is...
it's a whole other thing.
Quite vivid experience. Yeah. So somebody says, we've been bringing our three-year-old to the funerals of neighbours and extended family since he was young. Well, no, he's only three.
He's still young.
To get him used to funerals and death and speak about death in an age-appropriate way.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. And especially, you know, he's really young. He has no concept of what's going on, but you're planting a seed that when you are having this conversation, or when he does become very soon much more consciously aware of death, you have a frame of reference.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Though I suppose it's one of those things that if it relates to other people, and there's a difference between that and then it suddenly relates to somebody
when it knocks
on
your own door. And that's true of all of us. Yeah.
Yeah, indeed. Joanna, thanks a million. Thank you. As ever, Joanna Fortune there.
Moncrief. Weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.